The number one trait women look for in a man is a sense of humor. And if you don't think you have one, guess what? Yes, you do. And I can reach my tiny little hand down deep inside of you and pull it out. I've worked with hundreds of men and we've got their banter game up to where women are responding. They're not getting ghosted. They're getting dates and they're getting, you know, something else. So if you want to knock more than just her socks off, go to kristenandchill.com. If you banter better, you'll date better.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to know the hidden meaning behind what women say and do? Then check out The Chictionary. It's the Wing Girl Method's manual that gives you a full rundown of all the things women say that confuse men, written in dictionary format. Go get a copy of The Chictionary by going to winggirlmethod.com/chick. That's winggirlmethod.com/chick.
Coming up on this week's episode of the Ask Women podcast, we dive into you and others and the power of perception, because maybe you didn't know this, but we all have different perception styles. We perceive the world and those in the world very differently. And I have Linda Ross Vega on the show to tell us all about how our perceptions can differ. There's 6 different styles and she's going to explain them all. So keep listening. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Ask Women podcast. I have a very special treat for you today. I have a human diversity coach, Linda Ross Vega, on the show with me today. And Linda has been fascinated with what makes people tick since she was a child. Her curiosity about human diversity and ways to bring out the best in people led her to a multifaceted 40-plus year career in the C-suite as an entrepreneur and business owner, and now as a diversity coach. So we are going to have very interesting conversations today with her about what makes us tick, how to avoid making other people tick, and how to make people tick in the right way, so that we can create attraction. So welcome, Linda.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So tell me about making people tick and some of your experimenting and research early on, because I'm guessing you were kind of like a child who kept poking at people to see what would make them tick. Like, that's what I get from your bio. Is that what happened? Or tell me what happened.
A little bit. I think what I was always fascinated about is that I think things get done and seem to be of higher quality when people are doing what they want to do and they enjoy doing it, right? So it's natural.
Yeah.
I gravitated into technology back a long time ago and ended up specializing in helping troubled projects. And so it would be the situation where things would just get behind schedule or quality issues, etc. And so I always thought the challenge was to try and match people to what they did really well.
Yeah.
Because then things would run so much more smoothly. But, you know, the fact that it started back in childhood was mostly just curiosity about what made people different and why some members of my family seemed to do some things really easily. And I thought they were either not worth doing or very difficult.
Right.
And they felt the same way about the stuff I enjoyed. So I've always found that fascinating.
And I find that fascinating too. That's the world that I live in as well, just understanding how people work and why they work the way that they do. It's funny that you say that, because when I first started dating my now husband, I didn't understand the difference falling between an introvert and an extrovert, right? So I just thought that he was super silent. And many times I didn't understand why he didn't have enough energy for me. When I was around him, we were having fun, but I would drain him. And then as soon as I did more research into extroverts and introverts, I totally understood. And it had me looking at him very differently. I didn't put blame on either him or myself for the feelings that I was having when he would be lower energy. I just understood that he simply needed to recharge. Doesn't mean it doesn't frustrate me from time to time, but it's at least I can put an understanding behind what I'm seeing in front of me and not take the actions that are around me so personally.
You know, that is an absolutely excellent example. So what I deal with is a styles theory. It's called perceptual style theory. So what it's about is the way we each make meaning and therefore take action in the world around us. And so what we're saying with the theory is that we take in information through our five senses, we make meaning of that, and then we apply our life experiences to that and say, is it true or not true? And all that happens in like a blink of an eye, right?
Yeah.
So the way we perceive, we define six different perceptual styles. So people take the same information in, right? But they come to a different conclusion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've had that experience where I go to the same movie with someone and you take away one meaning and they take away something else. And you think, my God, were they in the same movie?
The same movie, exactly.
So it's the fact that we see the same things, but we take different meaning out of it. And I think the real gold in perceptual style theory is, you know, there's self-awareness, and that's where you start, because if you don't understand yourself, you really can't understand someone else.
Yeah.
But it's understanding that that other person, like your example with your now husband, is that they honestly don't see it the same way you do. So this isn't, you know, trying to push your buttons or doing something on purpose. It's like literally they don't get it. And that is so important in relationships, what the minor disconnects are versus what the major, you know, true like value differences or something disconnects are.
Well, can you talk a little bit more about that? Because there are some guys who say, oh, I have to have X, Y, and Z. But I mean, this is my perception, is that they may be surface level things, right? But to them, they're very important. How does somebody who is dating or somebody who is in relationships, how do they figure out what are the values? What are my perceptions? What are the core beliefs that are really important for me when dating and looking for a partner?
Wow, that is...
Sorry, it's a big question.
That's a big question. So I think it's really easy for all of us when we're starting relationships or looking for relationships to focus on the surface level or the 25,000 foot information. But I think it's important to take a moment to decide, what do you enjoy? I mean, what makes you happy? Do you like being spontaneous and being active? Or do you like planning things out first so that you can just sort of enjoy and experience something because the plan's already in place? And know what those preferences are that you have, so that when you are looking to be with someone, you want someone who can appreciate those things about you and augment them or complement them if they can, or share them. We have in our work six styles. So if you think of a wheel, and the styles are all next, you know, everybody has a neighbor, two neighbors, and everybody has an opposite style. I think that's one of the things that's fascinating about relationships, because you've heard that a lot. Opposites attract and opposites repel.
Mm-hmm.
So why do opposites attract? Opposites attract because it's interesting and it's fun sometimes, you know, like an example of, I'm really attracted to this person because they're spontaneous and adventurous and great sense of humor, and I'm more methodical and cautious. And so it can feel really fun in the beginning. And then after time goes on, if you don't continue to appreciate that difference in someone, what you end up hearing is, oh, I wish he would just, you know, calm down and be serious for once. And he's mm-hmm. saying, oh, I wish she would lighten up and have some fun for once, right?
Mm-hmm.
So opposite relationships can be really, really fun if you don't try to change the other person, but that you like that they're different than you are in the way they see things and approach things. And together you get a bigger picture as opposed to emulating each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it got us off track just a little bit, but I think that that's part of what's so important in relationships, is to understand what you're looking for. Do you like having conversations about weighty subjects, or would you prefer to listen to music and hang out? Those are important things to think of when you're picking who you want to spend your time with.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I got us off track, so don't worry about all of it.
No problem.
This is like a good flow, and whatever pops up that's interesting is what's
exactly
interesting to me and to the other people who are listening, hopefully. But I do want to get us back on track a little bit, because the biggest thing that we're talking about is perception, right?
Right.
And how you as an individual see the world and understand that other people see it differently.
Right.
So what happens a lot with the guys that I work with is that they may be frustrated, or they may be feeling really down on themselves because they have countless situations where they've put themselves out there with women or with a woman, and that woman or women have not wanted something the same as them on the other side,
right?
And so what happens is that men start to create this perception of themselves that they're unwanted, unattractive, all these different beliefs. So how do we help these guys so that they don't internalize a woman's reaction or response to them, around them, about them, as something negative about them as individuals? Like, how can we alter that perception?
Well, I love that question, because I think there's two answers. There's two pieces to it. The first is understanding the reality of negativity bias, okay? The way the human brain was constructed a bazillion years ago, right? Just think about it. Negative things were really important. Our brains took notice of them right away because they were more often than not life-threatening. You know, is this an animal who eats me, or is this one I eat? You know, it's those types of things. And even today, even though our brains have evolved over the years and the centuries, things that are said that are negative stick harder, and we tend to remember them more than we do the bazillion compliments that we get, right? Or, especially in our culture, we tend to encourage men especially to downplay and be humble, right? Because nobody wants
an ego bragger.
So they'll downplay the compliments they get, and the negative comments will stick, and they'll burn, and they'll hurt. So first is to understand that that is a natural tendency. So when you're feeling, you feel something negative happen, it's very important to be able to say, ah, yes, but was there anything good about that?
I like that.
Was there anything good in the comment? Were there two other good comments and this was the one thing that was said? You know, so get some perspective and context around the comment. So that's one step. The second step I think is real important is to be confident in who you are and what your own strengths are. Because maybe you're not that person's cup of tea, but honestly, maybe if you looked a little closer, they're not yours either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, if you understand what your own strengths are, you can use that as a litmus test when you hear a negative comment. Like, oh, you don't like my joking around? Well, I do. It's one of the things I do really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we wouldn't be a match then. I think what it helps us do, all of us in our relationships, is sort of naturally create boundaries. We may be attracted to something on the surface, but is that a choice I want to make? Does it make me have to change who I am and how I feel? Because honestly, you should never change yourself for a relationship. It's a no-win situation.
I completely, totally agree. Compromise is different, but altering yourself and shutting off behaviors that you love about yourself is not, it's going to bite you in the butt in the long run.
It is, because compromise is one thing. It's making choices. And compromise, we assume, when you and I are saying it, I'm meaning that both parties are doing something.
Right.
There's give and take with on both sides, right? But compromise, when you're the only person doing it, no. That bubbles up after a while, and it causes lots of resentment, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, every relationship takes work. I mean, even the ones we take for granted take work, you know, parent, child, or whatever. So they all take work, but it's the kind of work. Is it the kind where there's just going to be natural disconnects day to day because we're all human, and, you know, we're not all, you know, on every day. There's days we're down.
Or tired or stressed or distracted.
Exactly. So those things happen. But do you have the communication available to say, hey, it's just a down day. I'll be up tomorrow. Give me a little bit. Oh, and that's a really good thing to know about yourself when you're looking for relationships as well, is, are you the type of person who needs a little alone time? Mm-hmm. Like, I personally need alone time. If I don't have some built into my day where I'm just, you know, looking at, you know, drinking my coffee and looking at the news, or sitting outside or walking the dog or doing something where I'm just alone in my head, I start to end up being frazzled. My husband requires zero alone time.
I'm like your husband.
He jumps out of bed talking. He's, you know, got ideas all day long and everything. And what we had to do, and we've been married a long time, is come to an agreement that it's like, my need for alone time wasn't bad, and his not needing it wasn't bad. So he respects the fact that I do it, but I also try to put it in a more regimented sense, not the word I want, but more of a scheduled thing. Like, I do my morning thing, and he knows that I do that. And mm-hmm. So he'll go, I'll catch you after coffee about something he wants to talk about. Right.
Yeah.
And for us, it's critical because we're married, but we also own businesses together and we work together. So we're around each other 24/7. Right.
Right.
But those are little compromises that are good. Right. Because we're respecting each other's space from that standpoint.
Yeah.
But it's knowing those things about you, then you can nicely convey that to the other person and hopefully set up an understanding, as opposed to, oh my God, they're not speaking to me, something must be wrong. It's like, nah, low energy time. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what happens through talking and communication and asking questions, and even just being aware that others are different than you. And you said something really important, which is you have to learn how to communicate these things to others. Right?
Exactly.
Because there's a lot of time in my past where I'm like, how do they not know that I need this right now? And it's like, well, because I've never said it out loud and I haven't said it kindly. Right?
Right.
So what is the proper way to, you gave an example before with you and your husband, but what is the proper way to convey this information to somebody that you're dating or in a relationship with or married to?
Right. My advice is the best way is always, most always the simplest way is to just bring it up in conversation. Now, I'm a firm believer that timing is everything, right? So it doesn't mean just because I thought it now is the exact right time to say it. So when there's these types of things, my advice is to look for an opportune moment, to sort of keep it as a checklist item in the back of your head, an opportune moment when you're visiting, you can mention, you know, I get frazzled after a while and I need some alone time. And I find walking the dog is really something that I like. Would you have a similar experience or something? You can open the dialogue as opposed to, hey, can you
leave me alone?
Yeah, leave me alone right now.
Can
right?
you get away from me for 45 minutes and stop
exactly.
talking? Yeah.
Can you give me some space?
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's interesting is that perception, it is one of the most important types of diversity we have, because we can't see it. We can't necessarily hear it all the time, but that other person is making meaning differently than you are. And mm-hmm. so they're seeing something different as important than you are. And understanding that, and then for us, we use it as the styles as a tool. You understand that because I see the world the way I do, there are certain things I listen for. Just naturally, because they're the things that grab my attention. And when you understand that there's the difference in what we're listening for, you can tweak the way you're presenting information so that it can be fully heard. Because here's the bottom line. We all assume that the way we see the world and the way we talk and the way we listen is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course we do. Think of out of alignment that would feel if you thought it was the wrong way, right? But
right.
It's the right way. It's not the only way. And so for someone else, that's their right way. And it's understanding that. Because what happens, I think, with a lot of disconnects is that we assume the other person knows better or should know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're clueless because it's not something that's important to them. Or
right.
They didn't see it the way you did.
Yeah. So tell me more about these six styles that you've identified. Because you're basically saying that you've clumped people into groups from your research, saying that we've noticed there's six different styles of perception. So
right.
What are these six styles? How do you communicate to them? This sounds like a good cheat sheet for for business, for life, for relationships, for everything.
It is. It's great. Okay. So the six styles are, I'll do them in alphabetical order because that's easier for me, right? So the first is activity. And these folks make meaning through personal experience. Okay. So they're engaged in the world. They're busy all the time doing, being, thinking.
That's me.
They jump in. They're spontaneous. They're adventurers, right? The next is adjustments. And these folks are observant. They're what I would call very objective observers of life. Doesn't mean they don't participate, but they watch first and choose what they want to participate in. So they tend to be incredibly knowledgeable about the things that they're interested in, incredibly, and have learned over time that other people can't necessarily absorb the depth of what they know. So they'll hold back looking to see if you actually really want to know. And then
interesting,
all the information comes through. They're natural diplomats, understand just the natural protocol. And of all the styles, they tend to see the most complexity in the world. So how people and systems and organizations are all interacting and ripple effects. So very, very contextual in what they see. The next one is flow. And these folks make meaning through community and connection. So they tend to be the natural glue of any community, the ones that help bring people together based on, you know, shared values or common experiences or whatever. And they see how things impact people. They're acutely aware of the human impact of change, the ripple effects, how nature and people work together. They're the people who remember everybody's birthday, you know, celebrate occasions. They're the glue that hold us into community. It's the best way to say it. Actually, I was talking to someone the other day who is Flo, and she said that her husband had said, "Be the glue."
That's funny.
So then there's goals. These folks see the world with problems and problems are to be solved, you know, challenges to overcome, obstacles. They're incredibly decisive. They're fantastic at creating structure out of chaos because they seem to be able to just at a glance decide this is important, this is unimportant, this will move us forward, this will hold us back. They're great achievers. They'll push themselves way beyond what other people will do.
I think that's what my husband is.
Yeah, natural competitors. They see things as win-lose. We're not just going to play. I had a great friend who is goals, and we were learning tennis at the same time. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to figure out how many times we can volley the ball over the net? And she was like, seriously, what's the point?
Right. So there's no winner here. Exactly.
We're supposed to be learning how to ace this. So then there's methods. These folks are real, rational, fact-oriented. They have just as many feelings as everybody else in the world, but they tend to withhold them and let the facts speak for themselves. Incredibly good at breaking down complex situations into reliable, repeatable steps. Great list makers. I think that every organization class I have ever taken about how to organize has, which is not one of my strengths, is written with the voice of a methods perceptual style because it's so clear and so easy. And then last but not least is vision. These people are kind of future oriented. They see possibility and opportunity and they're kind of ad hoc decision makers. They'll make a decision now and then tomorrow they'll turn around on a dime because new information showed up.
Right.
They use their intuition a lot, intuitively see problems or see opportunities. They can be kind of inspirational and motivational in their speech only because they tend to paint a picture of how good it will be when, or won't it be fun when, you know, and get people enlisted in how to go move forward or see a new idea. So they'll get very excited about new ideas very quickly and they'll drop them just as quickly.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better,
and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
If you listen to the Ask Women podcast, then you are already miles and miles and miles ahead of other men when it comes to attracting and getting the girls you want. But I must confess, there's one missing piece in the puzzle, and that's flirting, or the ability to ignite sexual chemistry with any girl you meet in a matter of minutes. Most guys suck at flirting. They can't flirt their way out of a paper bag. But as your personal wing girl, I can't let you be one of those guys. That's why I want to show you the most effective step-by-step formulaic approach to flirting with any girl you like. This formulaic approach has been tested on thousands of girls and has been proven to work like magic. Yes, magic. You just apply the formula and see results instantly, and it's that powerful. To find out everything about this flirting formula, all you have to do is go to winggirlmethod.com/flirty. I've made a special video for you where I reveal what this formula is all about. Go to winggirlmethod/flirty and you'll find out all about it.
Okay, so I'm sure people who are listening have selected one of the styles that they sort of lean towards. I actually found three of them but I'm sure you can be a crossover between many. How do you know somebody is a different style than you? I guess you would sort of become knowledgeable on this and then be able to point out by the way that they speak.
Yes, exactly. And it's not as hard as you think. What I tell you is that we believe that you have one perceptual style, that you were literally born with it. It's innate. But you also have a whole lot of life experience.
Right.
So you and I may have two totally different styles. But for example, we're both drawn towards helping people, or we're both drawn towards art. It's just the way we go about it. It's going to be very different. So you and I could be relationship coaches, but your style of doing it will be different than mine if we have different perceptual styles. Right.
Right.
So we have some things that especially that it was a circle. So pieces of pie, you have two neighbor styles and an opposite style. So we'll have some similar things that we do. The how is usually the telltale sign. The how we go about it is usually the sign. And then to your other part of your question, just getting a little information about each style. In our book, I think there's probably maybe 3 or 4 pages about each style. I mean, it's not, you know, volumes and volumes. But at a high level, you start to listen for how people are expressing themselves. And you can usually guess within two, but you'll guess will help you refine your communication. It also, I tell you, is a great filter for this was lovely, but you'll remain a casual acquaintance. Thank you very much. This will be way too much work for me.
Interesting. So what are the conflicting styles then? Because that's interesting. That was going to be my next question. Like, which ones don't work well together?
Well, I will tell you that all styles can have great relationships, but there's different levels of work in them, right? And so it becomes the work you want to put in. So, for example, if you are with a next door neighbor style, you're going to share some things that you see similarly, right? So the work will be when the how bites you. And then you have to decide, is how something gets done more important than getting it done? Do we need to do this? So it's those kinds of conflicts that happen. My husband and I are next door neighbor styles. And so that's the thing that bites us quite often, is that we're off to go do this. Oh my gosh, we're still married after doing patio stepping stones. But that was a challenge because we're on the same mission, but we both went about it totally different. And we had to
That's exactly like me and my husband. We literally just think about it totally different. And we come together and we're like, wait, what? What were you thinking? It's hard.
Exactly. You know, we had to step back and go, okay, let's agree on how we're going to, you know, so that we could literally do it together and not at odds with each other.
Yeah.
With opposites, as we talked about earlier, if it's an opposite style for your relationship, my business partner, Gary, and his wife have opposite styles. And so it's a matter of knowing the things, like he's real high energy. She is not as high energy. She likes to plan. He's spontaneous. And so they literally take turns who's going to lead the activity. So if they're planning a weekend, it's whose turn is it? Because if it's his weekend, it's going to be spontaneous and fun. And if it's her weekend, they have an itinerary. But it's balancing those things. And if you look, think of the circle. So you've got two wedges that are next to you, and then you have one opposite. So that leaves two that are kind of, we call them one-offs. They're not next to you. They're opposite.
Right.
And sometimes those people can feel like they're from a different planet. It's like, seriously, that's what you got out of that conversation?
Yeah.
The thing with those relationships is they tend to work the best when what brought you together is shared interest and shared values. So maybe you both really like art. Maybe you're both in technology. Maybe you are both car mechanics. It's really, you have a shared passionate interest,
yeah,
or shared values. And then the fact that you respect that there's a difference in the other person and you're not trying to change them.
Right.
So it's a little more work, right?
Yeah.
In that situation, because things can seem foreign a lot of the times. The bottom line with any relationship is not trying to change them. You know, that's that advice that you always get with, you know, like somebody for who they are, foibles and, you know, and all.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're going to get into a relationship and that person is going to change their fundamental stripes, not happening.
Oh, yeah. Right. You're screwed. It's never going to happen.
No.
And you wouldn't want somebody to do that to you either.
Exactly.
You can grow together. You can learn. You can adjust. You can open your eyes to new things. But changing is, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Right. And think of the pressure that puts on that other person.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone feels like they're being forced to change, which is different than agreeing to compromise, then it's constantly on them to behave differently than their natural default mode, right? And after a while, resentment is going to happen. I mean, it's in the card.
100%. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that for a couple of minutes, because it's interesting. It's all in the way that you frame something, right? Because
yes,
really, when you're requesting a change, it really does mean a potential compromise or different tools to use to alter the experience.
Exactly.
But what happens, and from perception, is that other people can hear it as you're requesting for me to change who I am.
Right.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing for the guys who are listening to the show, because I have a lot of guy friends, I have a lot of guy clients, and when they come to me when they are in a relationship and they do talk about something that the woman in their life has said, they perceive it as something that she wants them to change rather than her just vocalizing something that's not working that needs to be worked on.
Exactly.
So I would actually say that most often people aren't requesting another person to change. They're just requesting for that person to work with them.
I think so. It's, you know, we don't always have the tools at hand, the vocabulary, you know, that we all have this thing,
yeah,
cheat sheet that we know what this word means or that word means. But it is, I think, when someone says, this is hard for me, or I need you to do such and so, instead of taking it at the surface value, is to say, can you give me more context?
Mm-hmm.
And ask them to give you, I mean, you can do it nicely, but the more context you have about the why they're saying that, or the maybe it's situational, it's not an always or never thing. Maybe it's just, yep, on Tuesdays, you know, when they've had a bad Monday. But you don't know if you just take the top level,
the face value
statement, and you, mm-hmm, don't ask for more information.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I found, you know, it's worked well. It's one of those things you try on and see if it works for you, is also say, well, I can hear what you're saying to me, but I want to share that that's just not something that I naturally do. Okay, my first inclination is to go here. So that's not something I can guarantee 100% of the time. I can say I'm willing to try more awareness on it,
mm-hmm,
and I'll give it a shot. But I can support you when you need that,
mm-hmm,
but it's not a forever thing for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you find out real quickly if those kinds of things are deal breakers.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's just really open communication, right? Instead of saying, yes, of course I can try and do that. And then you fail again. It's just like, that's where the tension, frustration, anger comes from, because it's broken promises. It's,
you know, a lot of the things that people complain about in relationships, where the truth is, if there was more curiosity, if there was more information up front and more communication, most often all of these conflicts wouldn't happen. And if they do happen, it's because these things just don't fit together and that it's time for to move on.
Well, or that we can agree to disagree because they see things the same way. But here's the other important thing to think about with perceptions. So it's basically a three-step process, right? It's taking the information in through your senses. It's making meaning of that with your perceptual style. And then your brain applies life experience too. Okay, so those three things happen just like that. But life experience is huge because you're thinking, your brain is for you saying, this has been true for me before, so maybe it's probably true now. Or, wow, this is new. I'm just going to jot this down. And so every time you have an experience about something, you're literally, without realizing it, subconsciously keeping track of the result. And that's how we decide some of the things we like and we don't like and what we want to do again and what we don't want to do again. And so it can be an advantage to know that your life experience is playing a part, but also you need to catch yourself because it may be that your last experience with this particular situation or topic was really not fun.
Right.
But the context and circumstances might have been different.
Yeah.
And so before reacting without consciously thinking about it, that gives you a chance for a new experience with it.
Totally.
The other thing is life experience is personal. It's unique. I can't give my life experience to you or vice versa. So there are going to be some things, even with someone you adore, that you're going to see differently because it's not what that means for them because that's not been their life experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's just sort of like, accept that it was different and move on unless it's an absolute deal breaker.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you just said that. I do have one final question. So if I am, I forget which one I resonated with. Let's say I was the last one that you mentioned, the visionary or vision. Let's say I was talking to somebody who I knew was a flow, right?
Yeah.
How would I alter my language or how do I speak to them?
Oh, I love it. Okay, so vision people get excited about ideas and inspirational and can tend to talk in bullet points. You know, like here are the critical pieces without all the context. So when you recognize that someone's flow, it's you need to govern yourself a little bit and check in as you're having a conversation. So for me, it would be something like the example I could use here is I am vision, so I can use this one. And my sister is flow. Isn't this perfect?
Yeah, there you go.
And here's the example. I travel a lot. We live in different states. And so when I know I'm going to be somewhere around there, it'd be like, oh man, I could make this a three-way trip and I could stop off by her place for the weekend and then go to this other deal. And I would call up and say, hey, how's the 20th look for you? Because I can be in town. And I'd hear this long pause.
Yeah.
And I would think, oh man, she doesn't want me. She didn't like me. It's like, whatever. And she goes, well, let me think about it. And it was like, oh, okay, that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then so it happened a while. This was years back. And so one day I said, so how could I ask you that question in a way that you don't sound stressed when you're responding to me?
That was good.
And she said, well, honestly, what happens is I think it's a great idea, but then I think to myself, I need to check the calendar. You know, do the kids need this? Is something I need to know that, and I just need a little bit. So if you could say, if you ask the question like, hey, there's a possibility I can do that. Would you mind checking and letting me know tomorrow or this afternoon, if that's good for you?
Yeah.
She goes, that would take all the pressure off of the immediate conversation.
Interesting.
Cool.
And she would have responded in a much more uplifting voice. Is that what she's
exactly
saying?
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. That's so funny. I have that happen all the time with my mom. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to come home for this. Oh, okay. And I'm like, wait, do you not want me to come home? And I know she's so excited for me to come home, but it sets me up to think she doesn't
right.
want me there. I'm in her space. I'm annoying her. And then it leads to all of this tension for the two of us. So that's interesting because she's definitely like a flow person as well. She has to make sure she doesn't have an appointment on like the Wednesday that right. I'm in. It's really hard for her.
Well, and think about it. Flow people naturally, I mean, they juggle many communities, their families, their friends, their, you know, outside interests, et cetera. And so they one thing has potential ripple effect on several things that they're doing or several relationships that they're managing. And so they need a little bit of time to do it. Whereas vision people kind of jump in and go like, okay, I'll figure it out. Yeah, cool.
We'll make it happen. Yeah.
We'll make it happen, right?
Yeah.
Neither way is right or wrong. It's just two different ways to getting to the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I love this. This is so fascinating. So tell me about where people can get this book, what the book's called, so that they can learn more about their perception style and then other people's perception styles. Because again, as I said, great in relationships, all relationships.
Yes, it is. I mean, you start understanding yourself and then you quickly can understand what the differences are and put things in perspective.
Yeah.
I will also tell you one of the other benefits of spending a little time learning about your strengths is that all of us spend a lot of time chasing our perceived weaknesses. You know, I think if we just fix this, happiness will happen. Or if we just fix that, this will happen. And I'm here to tell you that life is a journey, not a destination. But if you can be on the journey with your strengths, it puts what you think weaknesses are in perspective so that you can tweak what you need to and not set yourself up for
failure,
you know, unending chasing of things.
Yeah.
So anyway, the book is called Unlock the Power of Your Perception. It's available on Amazon in ebook and paperback, et cetera, et cetera. And we also have a website, which is called yourtalentadvantage.com. And you can learn all sorts of stuff on the website. If you feel like reading, there's way more info than you probably ever wanted. So I would say start there. There's also a free assessment.
That's cool.
On the website. So you can get a taste for what your perceptual style might be. And that kind of makes it more fun as you're reading through things. So, you know, I encourage people to go check it out. All I'd say, the other thing I'd like to say is that any tool that you find that you like that helps you with self-awareness and helps you understand the differences in people is a great investment of your own time.
I totally, totally agree. What's that website again?
It's yourtalentadvantage.com.
Yeah. So go take your assessment and then let me know what style you are. I love that. Yourtalentadvantage.com. Amazing. Linda, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. I just think this is so interesting. I love learning about me. I love learning about other people. I love learning about ways to learn other people. So this is something I hadn't heard of before. So I was really excited to have you come on and share this with my audience.
I appreciate it. I love this stuff. So anytime.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Of course. Guys, once again, thank you so much for listening to our show. I'm sorry that Kristen wasn't here today, but she should hopefully be back next week. But new episodes of the Ask Women podcast come out every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific. Please do not go and download individual shows. Please go and subscribe to our show so that you can spend the time that you would have spent clicking the download button on women, understanding women, or even really understanding yourself, as we've talked about on this episode today. You guys are awesome. We'll see you next week.